world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
What causes some people to keep bouncing back while others give up at the first sign of struggle? This week on Parents Are Hard to Raise, Diane tackles the subject of geriatric resilience, plus a down and dirty survival tip.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. My aunt just turned 97 years old this month, and if you look at her life, you would never have imagined her living so long and always being happy and cheerful and really now basically healthy. I mean, she has arthritis in her knees, so she has a little trouble walking, and she's a little forgetful. Why is it that some elderly can weather life's multiple challenges and hardships, that they can adjust with temporary reactions and return to their normal functioning within a brief time? If you look at my aunt's life, she had a really tough life. She had breast cancer in her mid-30s. So back then, all they did is a mastectomy. She had two young children. She had a husband who really didn't support the family. He was in construction, and he was kind of out of work more than he worked. And he kind of liked to play the horses. She had to work. She had to support her family. After the mastectomy, she had to go back to work. And she worked in a factory. And she was on her feet all day long working in a factory. They never owned a home, and they moved probably about 20 to 25 times in the course of probably until she was about 60 years old. And then her husband developed Alzheimer's disease, and she took care of him. And when she couldn't take care of him any longer, he went into a veteran's home, and she volunteered there. She was always laughing and cheerful. And when he died, she continued to volunteer there until her arthritis got so bad that it was hard for her to, you know, walk around and go from floor to floor. She used to dress up as a clown and go from room to room. I mean, she's great. Then she moved in with her children. They bought a home and they all moved in together. And she did go to adult daycare because she wanted to remain active and she needed a routine. She worked her whole life and she really ran the daycare. That she really ran her group. She was in charge of everything. I mean, my mom used to make up baskets and have these games so that people could win these baskets that they made up. She thrived there, really, until it was hard for her to get on the, they used to come pick her up. And one of the conditions was you have to be able to walk on the little bus that picked you up or the van. And she was having trouble with her knees. So she stayed home, and she's getting home care now. But she still remains her cheerful self at 97. So what was her secret, you know, throughout her life? She had a hard life. She had many adversities. They varied in severity and significance. She had many changes in her routine, and it came to the loss. She had a loss of a spouse. So what do we call that? How did she thrive? Well, it's defined in psychological, sociological terms as resilience. And I'm labeling it geriatric resilience. And what does that mean? It's bouncing back from a difficult experience. It's standing up to adversity. There's really no universal agreed definition or measure of resilience. What is resilience? It's dynamic. It can shift according to the circumstances. It can be exhibited as an outcome of a physical recovery from a traumatic event. For her, a traumatic event, she had a mastectomy, she had breast cancer. It can be a trait that describes a person's ability to cope. Well, she just kept going. You know, she had a strong constitution. She had strong emotional way about her. Her husband had a long illness with Alzheimer's, and she got through it. It can be a process of recovering from a stressful event and moving forward. Well, he died. That was the death of a spouse. When we think about resilience, we don't associate it with mom and dad, with elderly parents, because they experience loss and decline. But quite the contrary, resilience does not decline with age. In spite of the elderly having these losses, they have a higher level of personal well-being, of feeling content, than any other age group. And they're at least as resilient as younger adults. When they talk to geriatric patients, geriatric people in their 90s and 100s, they have, the older they are, the more personal well-being they feel, the more feelings of content they have. And could it be because they say, well, I don't take myself so seriously anymore, you know? I used to have another aunt who used to say, hey, what do you want? I'm 90, you know? So I want you to be encouraged that mom and dad can be resilient. How do we encourage that resilience? How do we encourage those characteristics? How do we encourage that behavior? Well, we talked about strong family support, being happily engaged with family. We talked about them, needing to interact with friends. That's just as important, being socially connected and having friends, as being engaged with family, because those things lead to resilience. We talked about eating right. We talked about them having a sense of purpose, volunteering, having a part-time job, being physically active, adopting a pet, walking, doing those things. Because doing those things encourage resiliency, and resiliency encourages those things. So it's really important. But there's also something else we didn't talk about. That the elderly, don't be surprised, but they can muster up different sources of strength that can help them adapt. They, when you think about it, they face multiple past adversities. They were in the Depression. They were in war. The men went to war young, and the women sometimes had families, and they were raising them on their own. Sometimes they had to work. They've had financial problems. They've cared for their own parents. So they can, you know, find these sources of strength. And one thing is, if they have a positive belief about their own ability, about their own competency, if they can control their own situation and they understand their own situation and have the encouragement from us as children, from their social network, from their friends, they can be resilient. If you understand that they need control over their situation, that's an effective coping skill for them. If they believe that they can handle their own problems and have control over it, and they have their mind active in that process, they're thinking, how am I going to solve this problem? How am I going to be able to do this? And we allow them to have that control, they can cope better. And by coping better, they have a better self-image of themselves. And when they have a better self-image, they're more positive and they're more resilient. You know, we tend to try to hover and control the situation. I know I've done that recently with my mom. My mom, I talk about her, she's 87, and she was recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And my sister has been battling cancer as well, a different type of cancer, but cancer. And you know, when my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, we were all surprised because she goes for mammography every year. You know, she's on top of, you know, her health and her the things she needs to do. And so when she was diagnosed, you know, right away I say to her, okay, this is where you have to go. And this is where you're going to have to go, you know, to this doctor and for this radiation, etc. And my brother had suggested another doctor in another hospital. And my mother wanted to go where my brother suggested, not only because she thinks my brother, you know, he's the boy and he knows. Not only that, but because she, in her social network, she researched this doctor and asked all around, and everyone said, this is the doctor to go to. And I was saying to my father, you know, no, she really needs to go to this place, and then she could just go right for the chemo or radiation, whatever she's going to need, right in that same hospital, etc. And my father agreed, and my mother said, no. This is where I'm going. And then I will go to the hospital that you want me to go to for the chemo or radiation, whatever I need. And, you know, she decided, she took control. And when she did, I realized that, you know, her focus shifted from the loss and the limitation, and she concentrated on fixing the problem. And she went to that, you know, doctor, that oncologist, that surgeon. She had the surgery, and then she was told, okay, she went to the hospital that I wanted her to have the radiation. And they said to her that she's going to have 7 weeks of radiation. And again, I'm saying, Ma, you can't have 7 weeks. How is this 87-year-old going to withstand 7 weeks of radiation going 5 days a week? There's no way. And she's like, this is what they told me I have to do, and this is what I'm going to do. And I'm thinking, oh my God, well, okay, she'll go through a few weeks, and then she's going to be so tired, she's not going to be able to do it, and she'll say, okay, I've had enough. This is my mindset. This is my thinking, not hers. She went through that 7 weeks of radiation, and when she was done, and she went 5 days a week, and when she was done, she was a little tired. She had a little burn reaction, but she's like, oh, I just put this cream on that they tell me to put on. And I'm like, didn't they give you anything for the pain? You know? And she says, oh, they wanted to give me something. I'm not taking that. I just use, you know, this Silvadyne that they gave me, and I put that on. And she's like, oh, and when I was done, they made me ring this bell. And they took a picture of me ringing this bell. And all the nurses and doctors come out and they cheer you on. And she was like, oh, I just went through the radiation. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, she got through it. And how did she do that? Well, she had that resiliency in her. She was allowed to make her own decision, control what she wanted to happen, and she got through it. So we have to really be careful of, you know, thinking we have to shield and guard our parents, especially when they can make their own decisions, and we have to allow them to. You know, we can support them, we can suggest things, but we have to allow them to do it. So maybe, you know, the research is right. They've been through all these stressors in their lifetime. And I think it has a little to do with personality as well. You know, my aunt has always been a very positive person. And no matter what, she was cheerful. You know, when I remember growing up with her, all the struggles she went through. But she used to come over our house and she'd say, okay, you know, we're going to have a slumber party. And we'd all lay blankets all over the living room. And, you know, my cousins and her, my mom, we just lay there, you know, and have slumber parties and tell stories. And you know, and then we'd eat together. And we'd just, you never, ever knew she struggled with anything. And my mom is a very positive person as well. Now, my dad went through, you know, cancer and chemo, and he's not as much a positive person, but he got through it. He went through it, and he just did whatever needed to be done as well. So they can, you know, if they don't have the personality, they can, with our help, with our support, with the social network, with being healthy, they can muster through it. So we really have to give them a chance to do that. And one thing that I have found helpful with clients, and when our parents lose a spouse, one thing that we can help them with, and it may sound kind of like crazy, but we can teach them a task that their spouse used to do for them. So if, you know, your spouse always cooked for you and maybe they don't know how to cook, well, studies have shown that if we teach them that concrete skill, or we say to them, let's go take a cooking class, or Ma, you know, go take a cooking class, go to the college and learn how to cook, do something like that. That concrete skill, by learning that, it's shown to be more helpful to them than talking about the death of their spouse. So it's kind of like that, yes, they are missing their spouse, but they're also missing a big area of support. And if you teach them that skill, that's another coping skill that they have. And studies have shown that the elderly can withstand and be more resilient with the death of a spouse than younger people can. And part of that may be because, number one, they have been through all these adversities in their life and they learn how to get through things better than a younger person. And also that possibly, you know, in an older person, they expect that the person is going to, you know, die before a younger person does. But we can't just think our parents are so fragile and try to steer them and direct them. I find myself doing that as well. So that's one thing that I need to encourage you about, as well as myself. We need to just let them be. And when we come back from the break, I'll talk to you a little bit about what William Shakespeare said about the older Americans.
She's always been there for you. She taught you how to ride a bike, tie your shoes, make your bed, blow your nose. She nursed you through the chicken pox and that nasty stomach flu. She was there on your first day of kindergarten, just out of sight, peeking through the window, her heart breaking just a little. You were growing up so fast. She knew just what to do to make it all better when you skinned your knee, came home with bubble gum in your hair, and got your heart broken for the very first time. Now, she needs you, and you have no idea how to help. You're not alone. Since 1982, we've been helping people just like you find answers to the problems you're facing right at this moment. Life is so much more complex than it was when we were kids. The stresses you and I face today are greater than they ever were for our parents when they were our age. We're pulled in so many directions at once. There never seems to be enough hours in the day. And no matter how much you do or where you turn, it still feels like you're letting someone down. These are the kinds of problems that can tear families apart. The good news is, you're in the right place. There are solutions, and we'll help you find them. We are the men and women of MedEx Home Care, and for over 35 years, we've been helping families just like yours grow older together.
May is Older Americans Month, and as William Shakespeare said, to thine own self be true. And let's see if he was right. Sociologists have suggested theories about how people should grow older in society. And in the 60s, they had a disengagement theory. And that theory described aging as inevitable and that older people should withdraw from society. And the individual and society, that was a mutual understanding. They wanted older people to just fade away into the woodwork, let the world move on without them. And they thought, okay, that's a win-win situation. And then the 70s rolled around, and another theory came about in response to that disengagement theory. And that was the activity theory. And this was the opposite of the disengagement theory. So sociologists thought, in order to age well, people must maintain their social contacts, their social roles and interactions, rather than disengaging. And you say, okay, that's okay. But what happened was, people became fanatical about it. The theory evolved into believing that every older person should be a busybody and a social butterfly. And if you weren't, then you weren't aging well. So that kind of was just as bad as the disengagement theory. So then along came the 80s. And now the theory in the 80s was the continuity theory, where the elderly should accept and adapt as they age, and that they can achieve the greatest level of well-being if they just try to preserve and maintain their sense of self, their relationships, and their same way of doing things, so that as we age, we should be true to ourselves. So be who we are and not what society expects us to be. So I think William Shakespeare had it right. Now I want to salute all our parents, all older Americans in May. And there's one person that I do want to salute, Dottie. Dottie worked into her 90s because she just needed to work. She was healthy. Her eyesight was going a little. So when she was 92, she said, you know, I'm a little nervous driving because the winter is coming. I'm not so afraid of me. I'm afraid of all the other people. So I think I better stop working. So she was at home one day, and she felt pain in her arm, and she fell. And she laid on her floor until her friend found her the next day. And Dottie had a stroke, and she was paralyzed on one side. She went into the hospital, and she went into then rehab. And she came into my office the other day, and she was using a wheeled walker. And she said to me, this is my new car. And I looked at her and I said, Dottie, you look fantastic. You look great. When I saw you in the hospital and I was scared for you. And when I saw you in rehab, because she was bedbound and she wasn't talking, you know, she had aphasia. She had, you know, paralysis on one side of her body. And she said to me, I hated that rehab. I hated the place. I hated being there. But I listened to those therapists, and I took whatever they told me to do, and I did it. She said there were people there who I felt so bad for because they were crying, and they were saying, I can't do it. She said, but I just did it. It was hard, and it hurt, but I did it. And she said, and look at me. And I said, oh, my God. You have to salute her. She had resilience. She just struggled through it and she did it. And now she's walking. She's back to being independent. And you just have to love Dottie. And here's my survival tip of the week. Gardening. So digging in the dirt may be more beneficial than you think. Why? Well, it provides contact with nature, which in turn decreases stress. It helps you concentrate and provides time to de-stress, to recover from mental fatigue. You get a sense of satisfaction and peace. You reduce symptoms of depression. And the best is, as always, it can burn calories. So gardening is great for the body and the mind. And it's even been linked to lower obesity rates and heart disease. So let's all get out there. It's springtime and garden. My producer is telling me that's all the time we have for today. So if this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode at parentsareheartoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there is something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in future shows. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. That's Diane with one N, B-E-R-A-R-D-I. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Countersink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.